Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Future of Women podcast. My name's Camilla Marcus, and today I'm speaking with Kia Damone, chef and founder of Kia Feeds the People. We are so grateful to have you on this program, particularly during Women's History Month. Again, Kia, welcome, and just thrilled to have you on.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. It's always nice when people want to ask me about my story. I'm like, oh, thanks.
Well, I think you have an extraordinary and inspiring one that is still in early innings. So it's really such a privilege to get to talk to you and hear where you've come and where you're going, most importantly. So I always start with what I call professional love stories. I think we all end up in roles and industries and jobs and career paths that sort of captivate us at some point. It usually isn't linear, but curious, how did you find your way to food and food advocacy and where you find yourself today? What was your aha moment or that falling in love story where you thought, all right, somewhere in this world is my place?
Good question. I would have to go all the way back to before I even got into cooking, and who knows how old I was. I would watch my mom, very strong-willed woman, no BS kind of person, strong boundaries, but also extremely kind and extremely giving. And I feel like oftentimes with women, those two things don't get to be synonymous or just portrayed as such. But my mom, I remember always seeing her give back to other people, whether that was when we were in church growing up and she's like, I'm giving kids ride home, or when we're at the grocery store. Very much when we were at the grocery store, and if the person in front of her couldn't pay for groceries, or oftentimes it was like a mom who couldn't get formula or anything, my mom would just be like, oh, just put on my card, and just wouldn't think another thing about it. When I grew up with my brothers, especially my brothers who like grew out of all their clothes like every day, my mom would get us together at least once a month, and we'd go through our clothes and go through our shoes and things, and we'd take them to a shelter, and she would make sure it was good stuff, not just throwaway, she called it outside clothes, throwaway ratty tatty clothes. She's like, you don't want nobody. She would go through the clothes after us and be like, you wouldn't want anyone to give that to you, would you? And we'd be like, oh, no. And over time, she just kind of instilled that desire to just help and not think twice about it. And I think that was the first seed when thinking about advocacy and thinking about helping people. Even now out of New York City, I'm always thinking about helping people. And if someone needs something and I don't have it, I feel terrible for the rest of the day. Fast forward to last summer, and I'm without consistent work. And even the work that I'm doing or was doing before, I'm thinking about how unsatisfied I was with it and how self-serving it all really felt. And I'm like, what am I missing? What is it that I need to do? And then I look around and I'm like, oh, wow, people need help. There are people out there advocating for other people and they need help so that they can continue advocating. So what can I as a chef do? And then I was just like, oh, duh, you got to feed people. You have to do what the core of your work is as a chef, the core of hospitality, the core of service work is being in service to others, helping others, being hospitable to others. And that's when I kind of had that aha moment where I was like, ooh, wow, I feel like I rediscovered my purpose. And I feel like I'm actually in love with what I'm doing and what I desire to do.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think our business is all about taking care of others, which sometimes to those experiencing it, maybe that's a little lost. It's not about just the commodity, and it's not about what's on the plate. It's about giving someone that hug, right, that only we can do. And I love what you said about your mother. I think strong and kind, I agree, unfortunately, don't often get perceived hand in hand, though they should. And I will tell you, I'd love to meet her because she sounds incredible. And
oh my gosh. She is. She's a Gemini.
So is my mom. And I would describe her in just the same way.
There needs to be a support group for us, like growing up with Gemini moms and Gemini parents. That service part, that being hospitable part, that like hug feeling part, up until that moment that I had, I was just like, I don't really think I've ever felt that in any of the work that I was doing, in any of the kitchens that I was in. It felt like we were supposed to hate the work, hate the customers, hate each other. Like, hate everything was just so, like, just did not feel good at all. And I was like, geez, Louise, like, I got into this because I love food so much and I love people so much. And everything about this feels like the antithesis of that. So it was wild to get out of that work and come back to this work and be like, oh, this is what it should actually feel like.
I mean, the pressures of the pandemic, I think, make that even harder. So it's incredible that you
Yeah.
were able to find that light through such a very dark time. For those that maybe aren't as familiar, can you tell them what Kia Feeds the People is, the inspiration, and sort of where you're hoping to take it?
Yeah, so Kia Feeds the People is my baby. It is my child. It is the only one that I have. So Kia Feeds the People is my budding nonprofit. I say budding because there is no 501(c) paperwork yet. That takes a long time. But in the meantime, it is very much mutual aid and all of that. So Kia Feeds the People was birthed last summer when I was trying to figure out what I needed to do and how to get it done. And I was talking to my girlfriend and another good friend of mine, and I was like, I just want to feed people. Like, that is just it. Like, that is the basic need, and that's what I want to cover. And we were trying to think of names for them and just like something, some kind of something to give it a name so I can know how to operate. And I was bouncing all kind of stuff, and then I was just like, well, what about Kia Feeds the People? That's silly, right? And my girlfriend was like, no, I think that is it. I'm like, okay, Kia cooks and Kia feeds the people. So what I want for Kia Feeds the People, what the aim is to bridge the gap of food insecurity. And like, that sounds like a super large thing. I also want to address food apartheid. The goal for Kia Feeds the People is to bridge that gap between food insecurity and food security. From insecurity to security, I want to bridge that gap. And then also trying to address food apartheid. And saying those out loud, like, that feels like a really big, daunting goal. But I think what helps keep it kind of centered is remembering that it isn't just me who's doing this work, and I'm not the first nor the last to do this work. If anything, I just want to join the ranks of those who are. As far as services and such, I'm aiming to get about 200 boxes of fresh produce and pantry items, hopefully fall of 2021. Yes, this is the year 2021. In fall of 2021, get some pantry and produce boxes out, turkeys, chickens, things like that for the holiday, and then try to slowly roll out other services, like, a soup kitchen style thing for the homeless and unhoused community. I could look into doing a free breakfast and lunch program out of an actual building space maybe sometime next year. I just want to establish food programs. It seems so basic to be like, people need food, we need to feed people. Like, sometimes it just blows my mind. It's like, how is this not just a regular thing? Why are people without food? It's infuriating. It truly is.
Especially in a country like America. I agree.
Yes,
And I
oh
think,
my God.
unfortunately, and I think a lot of times the attention goes elsewhere, which I understand all the reasons why, but we do have severe food insecurity issues in this country that don't often get
Severe,
highlighted.
exactly, severe food insecurities. I think about being in school and how some people that I went to school with, eating at school is probably the only meal they get. Like, they need to hurry up and get to school in the morning time to get breakfast. And then, Lord forbid, your bus is the one of the buses that comes in late because of your specific route. And then when you have lunch, like, that lunch is your meal. So then when we think about COVID and all the kids who are home and missing that one meal that they need, it's just like, come on. And then while we also have supermarkets that are out of reach or priced so extremely high, it makes me so angry that I can't even like feel that anger in my body. You just feel exhausted thinking about it. You really do. So I'm like, well, instead of feeling exhausted about these systems that I'm very well aware of, what can I do to at least support my community, my immediate community, or within a mile radius, 2 mile radius, maybe 500 feet radius? Like, what can I do Just to, even if it's 10, 20 people, if I can help those 10, 20 people, then I can do my part.
Well, it's interesting what you said too about COVID. I remember in the first week of the shutdown, I've been very involved for many years in school food in public schools in New York, and people didn't realize that. The kids rely on those meals oftentimes exclusively. And so when they shut schools, I remember that gap. And it took the city really quite a while to realize that they had to provide meals through the schools, that they can't just leave that as a service not provided anymore. And even then, what I think most people don't realize is the budget per child per day is $1. That's insane in this country.
It is insane. Whew, I feel like that's a whole nother. I feel like that's like part two of this episode is just me going in about all the ways that this state really does fail. It does fail. I'm 27 and I grew up post 9/11, and there's just a whole lot of patriotism, and there's a whole lot of America's doing this and everywhere else is doing that. And then you get older and you're like, no, actually, America, you're doing this too. It's frustrating. And then even now, it's exasperated with COVID because we're all just like, oh my God, we are truly without. And the gap is getting larger and larger and larger. And it's like, all right, we can't necessarily look to the government at large. So a lot of people are stepping up. Literally, we the people, in the most literal sense of we the people, we have to go help each other. There's this saying where they say, what is it, robbing Peter to pay Paul? We have to like pass around the same $20, whatever it takes, to make sure that at least our neighbors or our close friends or whoever, that we can survive. And that's the kind of mindset a lot of people have right now. And it's inspiring also to see what has come out of that, to see people stepping into their power and stepping into roles to help the next person. And I was like, I've always kind of been raised with this mentality anyhow. This kind of work and this kind of approach feels the most fulfilling to me. So it only feels natural to step into that with everybody else. The idea of feeding people is like super radicalized and super like, whoa, we shaking the table, you know? And that's just because of how much we lack out here in the States or in our communities and with these systematic mess, madness. But I don't want people to feel like Kid Feeds the People is doing something radical and doing something crazy or like changing the game. It's like, no, the game is still what the game has been for a really long time. And I'm just trying to do my part in this moment to assist people who are also doing this work to try to alleviate that until we hopefully, maybe not even in my generation, but like get to some place where this isn't the reality that we live
You use the term food apartheid. I know what it means. I don't
in.
think all people really have a full scope of what it is, what the driving force behind it is. And I think it's important, right, to understand the structures, the systems, and the issues to better appreciate and better be part of the solutions.
Yes, I won't say that it's complicated, but it can go really deep. A lot of people are used to the word food desert. And I was used to the word food desert growing up. A desert implies that, like, this is just a thing that exists. It's natural. Deserts are natural. Some people are like, oh, it's a food desert. Then it's kind of like, oh, yeah, here's this natural area
Just
that is
happened.
naturally without food. It just happened. Who knows? It just happened. Where I'm sorry, that made me laugh. It just
No,
happened.
I agree. Words
How are
matter. I say that because I do really think that words matter, and I want you to
Oh,
illuminate because I
absolutely.
really don't think people understand this.
Exactly. I love it. I listened to this other podcast called The Read, and it's pop culture. And this woman, she's like, words mean things. Words mean things. So you're saying food desert. This is a natural patch in a community that naturally has no food, and that's just the nature of it. Whereas food apartheid comes in, and it actually points to how things are. It's like systematically intentional. So you have to look at the food system as a whole, and then you take in account geography, you take in account people's race and ethnicity, you take in account class and income and all the intersections of that, and think about how that affects our food systems. And at the end of the day, It largely affects communities of color. It largely affects Black communities. And if you go deeper into the systematic piece of it, you can think about how people zone grocery stores, who gets the good grocery stores. You think about redlining. You think about maybe they put a grocery store in a Black neighborhood, but like it's produce and stuff that's like not of quality. Food apartheid is just a better way to help people understand how these things are actually intentional. And there are people making those decisions about who gets what. And usually it's Black people and people of color and elderly communities and lower income communities who are just left out to dry and not getting the same food or not getting the same opportunities and being affected by everything. Everything. And it's just a much more intentional word. Because when people say food deserts, you imply that that's just the way that it's supposed to be. And it's like, no, there's a reason why this is the way that it is. Does that make sense? I
Absolutely.
know you know, but is that like an easy intro to food
Well, and I
apartheid?
think the reframing is important because it also beckons that we must get involved and we need to be part of a solution because something to your point of, oh, it just happened, it's meant to be there, that begs the question, what can I really do about it? And it's an easier thing to shrug off. I think a word like apartheid is intentionally charged, and I think it's important because it's just going to be a lot harder to say, oh, I don't have to do anything about that.
Exactly. The origin of the word apartheid, it goes back to South Africa when the whole policy was about segregation and discrimination, which they only what just lifted, I believe, in the 90s. And that was really huge. That was massive. So then you take that and then you tag food along to it. It's just like, whoa, it really opens your eyes. You're like, oh my God, no, this is some insidious, intentional, racist, classist, jacked up stuff going on. And it does. It beckons you to be aware and it makes it your problem. I feel like food apartheid should be everybody's problem. Well, it is obviously already the problem of these communities that are affected. But for those who can turn a blind eye and go to this like super expensive CSA, it's your problem too. For those who can go to high-end grocery stores and can pay for food delivery, it's your problem too. People who can afford meals that are already like made or who can spend lots of money at a farmer's market somewhere that's far away from other people, it's your problem too. The more we start replacing food desert with this word, I think that it'll at least help not really light a fire, but just kind of stir things up a little bit so people won't feel so complacent. That baby is turning up.
By the way, that's him after 8 hours of being at the park, and my brother was over playing basketball with him. This kid has no off button,
Love it.
living for life. Quite off tone of what we're talking about, but I'm
Amazing.
glad it gave you
I love it.
the smile.
Listen, that baby has nothing to worry about right now. So live
Oh,
your life,
that is the
okay?
truth. He is joyful from the inside out. That is the truth. I think you said something really important too, which is we have to face the facts. I do a lot of advocacy work at multiple levels of government, and I always say we're paying for it one way or the other. And I really think that that's the biggest thing that misses for people. When you have food insecurity, you have pressures on social services, you have pressures on the healthcare system, you have pressures on the education system. It's not a deniable absent cost. It's just whether you're going to actually look at it and see what's actually happening. It's not invisible. It's happening elsewhere. It's whether we're going to own it and also how dignified and how sustainable the solution really is, right? If you're paying for it in healthcare costs, that's just an undignified way to take care of someone who could be taken care of, like you said, by having access to healthy, well-grown, accessible, affordable food.
When you like start taking step backs, you're like, oh, okay, and this affects this. And you take another step back, and this affects this, which affects this. And you take another step back, and this affects this, which affects this, which affects this. You're just like, oh, damn. You're like, damn, you're not as far removed from it. People like to point the finger at different communities and be like, oh, well, don't go to the hospital, or they don't do this, or they don't do that, or they don't do that. And I'm like, do you think that these are choices that people want to like willingly make? Like, how do you not see that people can only do their best within the systems that are provided for them? It's that part where you think something does not affect you or that you will not pay for it at some point. And I think that spirit definitely came in when that first wave, almost a year ago now, of being inside with COVID and watching our government fail us. And almost for the first time, it felt like people were on equal ground when everyone's just like, oh, wow, like all these privileges or whatever that had me feeling separate from everybody else. Now those things are gone. I'm just being treated like everybody else. Wow, I guess there actually is a problem. And I think for the first time in a long time, people were looking outside of their bubbles and outside of themselves. I just hope that that spirit continues when we talk about food insecurity, when we talk about food apartheid. Maybe that's optimistic. I don't know. If it is, it's fine. I'm gonna keep doing the work and doing the best I can. It's something I've been thinking about for a little
Well,
bit.
it sounds like you have been so tremendously influenced by your mom, and it sounds like her ethos of having you think about someone else and how it is your problem, it's all of our problem, and that one person can make a difference. I think that's hugely powerful and seems like she's been a huge through line into how you think about even one of the most pressing and prevalent social issues in our country. She didn't even
She
know
really has.
it.
She did it. My mom is truly the blueprint. Even when I think about how I want to act, like who I want to ask for donations from and what kind of produce and things I want to get, I think in the early stage, very baby stage, I remember being connected with some folks about getting produce, and they had mentioned like, oh, well, we have this produce, the like, not like the extras, but the stuff that didn't get sold, so it's kind of gonna like die in terms of chef produce lingos. I'm like, well, I don't want throwaway food. Like, I don't want throwaway food. In the same way that my mom was like, do you think anybody wants your ratty tatty throwaway clothes? Should people be just grateful to have anything, even if it's throwaway ratty tatty clothes? Like, why would you do that? And I've carried that spirit when thinking about what kind of food I want to get to other people. Like, I'm not going to give anyone some kale that says, hey, you need to cook this today, because when you wake up tomorrow, this kale will completely decompose. It's like, why? Why does it have to be like that? Why does it have to be grateful for what you have, or give people the extras or the spoils or the whatever? A lot of this produce is being so extremely inflated, and a lot of these farmers aren't even being paid what they deserve to be paid. So who are you to give me scraps to then give to people who are already being jerked around and punished by a system and barely have access to the things they deserve? I definitely have gotten that mindset from her, and I try to keep that in mind as I go forward and I start planning for this first pantry food drive kind of situation. Like, no, I want to get people the best because people deserve the best. That's a human right. I'm not going to compromise on that. And that's definitely my mom. That's definitely my mom poking out,
Look, it's such a powerful community mindset. You're only as good as your neighbor next to you, and you owe each other a responsibility, but also solutions with dignity. I think we sometimes forget. It's like, okay, you could fix it, but we are humans, we are people, and there's an added element of it's not just about a solution, but it also should be dignified.
It should be dignified. Oh, yes. I'm gonna put that on my like wall. I am gonna put that in the wall. That's gonna be the new mission statement for anyone who works at Key Feeds the People. It should be dignified. You show respect to the people that we're giving to. That's just always been a thing that bothers me, the way that we, and I say we as a community or as a whole, as a global whole, can often look at people who need help. And maybe it's that individualism, but something about us maybe looking down on those that need help to like kind of separate ourselves from them and kind of maybe put ourselves on a pedestal and put people who need help beneath. And that makes us feel like, I don't know, even if we're getting screwed by the world, that at least we're not getting screwed in these ways. I remember one of my first jobs, there was a gentleman who would come in who needed something to eat. And this is a whole corporation, chains, $1 billion. Anyone getting a meal for free at this location is not going to destroy the infrastructure of this billion-dollar company. But everyone was so hung up about giving this person food and was acting so stinky about it. And I was like, yo, what's wrong with y'all? Something could happen to you at this job. Maybe you miss a couple weeks of work or whatever. You miss a few checks. You were already living check to check because the minimum wage is so low. Then you're living check to check, and then you can't cover your rent at your apartment. And then you miss what, a month or two of rent? And now you're behind on rent and you can't catch up. And then there's the possibility of eviction. And then just like that, you're homeless. And they were just like, what? And I was like, yeah, just like that, you're homeless. Just like that, something can happen in life that could put you in a similar situation as someone else. So what is this ego? Like, what is this that is making you look down on someone else when that could have easily been you? Something could happen to you in this world, because that's just the world that we live in. It's so fragile. It's so fragile. There aren't real support for people to live fulfilling lives and healthy lives. And that always bothers me. Like, why do we look down on those that need help instead of looking at this world, this state that we live in that is so flawed? It's so very flawed. I think about that once every blue moon. It just helps me stay grounded and remember why I'm trying to do what I'm trying to do, and to make sure that we're, like you said, everything needs to be dignified, that we're seeing people as people, because your story could have easily been a different story. And I don't want to say that in the sense of like inspiration porn or like anything like that, but we oftentimes get caught up and forget what kind of system that we live in, and how all it takes is one moment, or rather, you've had everything given to you, you'll never have that moment. But it's like you need to stop and think for a second before you try to demonize somebody who needs some food. Like, come on, you
And
know?
really, it doesn't have to be a zero sum as we think. And I think if we sort of take a beat and remind ourselves, it doesn't have to be so zero sum, and that there is actually enough. And look at how much we have in food waste in this country. It isn't that we don't have enough. It's that, to your point, there's structural channels that are not geared properly. So what does an equitable food system look like to you?
Oh, that's a hard question.
Well, I'd say it as far as, does it
I don't
start with
know. It's still
grocery
something I'm thinking
stores? Does
about.
it start with how restaurants
Oh,
function?
okay.
Does it start with home? I have a dear friend, actually Wes Moore, who has been in charge of Robin Hood in New York for the past 4.5 years. And he said, I'm on a mission to end childhood poverty. And I said, well, you got to start with childcare, because children's brain develops 95% before the age of 3. So by the time they get to school, we're done. I don't want to say done. I'm like you. I'm still a forever optimist, but biologically and scientifically, really it's 0 to 3 that we got to get things right. So that to me is childcare territory. That's before school. So in the food system, what do you think is sort of the gating issue?
Yeah, totally. I love that you brought that up. I like talking in.
Thanks.
I do. I do. I'm also learning so much from you. We need to take it all the way back to the farmers. So you see pictures of farmers, like a blueberry farmer, and they maybe get like a dollar 75 per like three large buckets of blueberries. And then within those large buckets of blueberries, per 8 ounces of those blueberries, it's being hiked up at a grocery store for like $7.99. You're like, what? You're like, that doesn't make any sense. Or when people get their avocados, super expensive avocados, and they're complaining that the price of avocados have gone up. And it's like, well, the people harvesting those avocados make, in comparison to what you pay, absolutely nothing at all. And because of the high demand of avocados, the land is being stripped of its ability to continue to produce avocados. Or when everyone was in love with quinoa, the same thing. Or thinking about chocolate, some companies are sourcing their chocolate off of child labor. Before it even gets to my grocery store, before it even gets to my plate, before it even gets to my restaurant, it's already covered in blood and violence and criminal lack of pay. Before I could even think about how it can be equitable, all the way where I am, we have to go way out there where the food is coming from in the first place. I really don't know quite yet, at my current knowledge or my capabilities, how to fix that. But I feel like we have to start all the way back there.
It's a mountain, but we'll
It's just
get there.
so, yeah, I'm just like, literally, I see this giant mountain. I'm like, that is so ugly. That's why I'm like, I'm not holding my breath for any of this to happen in my generation or my lifetime. Like, I'm not even going to play myself in that way and be like, before I die,
I don't know,
this is
Kia.
going to
I don't know. I think you're
change.
selling yourself short. I
You think
do.
so?
I
You
think
think
you're selling
so?
yourself short. Like I
I
said,
might
we're in the
be.
early innings, so don't beat the clock for yourself. I don't believe in that.
You're right. I appreciate that. I think I'm so used to slowing myself down because naturally, as a Sag, I'm just like, go, go, it's happening.
Well, I'm an Aries, so I'm not much help
But
on
then I,
that. I'm like, was it done
oh my
yesterday? What
God,
happened?
wow. You're like, so by the time I'm 40, I'll get the Nobel Peace Prize because I've done this. But who knows? Maybe so. But I know that we have to go way out there before the food even gets to. And that's just something that's just been ingrained in our history, in the history of the United States and the history of this world, labor around who's harvesting food. And it's tough and it's an ugly, very, very dark history. And a lot of people think, oh, it's changed because certain things have been abolished. And it's like, no, it's just now moved into a modern way of doing it. Like, even in prisons where they're using labor from inmates or incarcerated individuals to create certain products for nothing at all. And that's like literal modern slavery right there. And then you go to, it's sick. It's real sick. So before it even gets to me, when I decide if I want to do a meatless Monday to kind of lessen my imprint on the world, like the imprint is already there. And it maybe wasn't created by me personally, but because of the systems that are already in place surrounding food, it's already there. So sometimes it can definitely feel hopeless, but I think it begins to feel hopeless when you think that you could take it all on in one day. But I am hopeful for my generation and for the youth. The youth are brilliant. They are so brilliant. I love watching them on TikTok and all the things they're learning and saying and all that. So I have a lot of faith in them as well to go in and shake some stuff up, to get some of these lawmakers and policymakers and all these folks up out of here, you know what I mean? And try to write some of these things. So then we can start going from zooming all the way out and then like starting to zoom back in once we kind of defeat those bosses, the bosses of food inequity and food apartheid and food insecurity.
So you've teed up perfectly to my concluding question that again I ask every guest. I think again, we start with a look back and then we end with a look forward. What's next in your mind? What is the future of food justice and a more sustainable food system?
I would really like to see, and this is, I don't ever think that this answers your question, but something that I fantasize about is a grocery store that's completely free. Like a really nice grocery store in a neighborhood that's completely free, just supported by the government or maybe local donations or local governments and things like that. That's something way far, far, well, not far. You said not to sell myself short, but I see that in the future. That's not happening tomorrow, but hopefully that would happen. That would happen someday. But I think mutual aid, of course, will become more mainstream. Like that is the norm, what I mean. And hopefully they continue to get proper funding, you know, so that we continue this work. But I think the future also involves more community awareness across racial, economic, and geographical pathways. Yeah, I think that's what I see for the future. More people being aware. Like it's regular stuff, being taught these things in class, in school, having these things addressed more often so that it becomes normalized to think in this way, to see in this way, and to start really, truly giving a damn. But also, I would like to see a grocery store free. I think a free grocery store supported by the government would be pretty sick. So who
Thinking
knows?
local and global at the same time. I love it.
At the same time.
Exactly. Well, Kia, again, I cannot thank you enough. So insightful, so impactful. Like I said, I think this is just the start of such a vibrant future. And again, your passion for impact, for community, for giving a damn, it's infectious and inspiring, and I know everyone listening in now can come away with what your mom taught, which is everyone is everyone's problem, and there is actually something you can do about it, and solutions with dignity. That's the important
Solutions with a dick. I'm telling you, I'm
thing.
gonna put
It'll
that.
make me
That's gonna
smile every
be
time
when
I
I
see it.
update. It will. I'll put it on the wall.
Thank you again so much, and just again, appreciate your time and your vulnerability and your candor. And we are so excited to see the future of Kia Feeds the People.
Yeah, thanks so much.